Welcome to the A to Z of Sex with me, Dr. Lori Beth. I'm an intimacy coach and psychologist. I created this show to explore the erotic alphabet, to help you learn more about desire and expressing your desires, discover ways to spice up your relationship and create that sizzling relationship you've always wanted. I do this through solid science, real life stories, and interviews with an exciting variety of sexperts. Listen in weekly as I share key strategies to help you create your ideal sexual life. Make sure you join us to access even more sexual strategies on my blog, A to Z of Sex. Access our monthly newsletter with subscriber-only offers at www.atozofsex.com. That's A-T-O-Z-O-F-S-E-X. Welcome to the A to Z of Sex. I'm Dr. Lori Beth, and I am your host. We are working our way through the erotic alphabet one letter at a time. Just a reminder, this podcast deals with adult content, so if you don't have total privacy, you might want to put on some headphones. Today, the letter is W, and W is for whores. At present, the word whore refers to both a sex worker and it is the most popular insult to hurl at a woman who's either too independent, taking too much charge of her sexuality, or too much charge of her life. This week, I am happy to be joined by an expert on the history of the term whore and whores and sex workers themselves. Dr. Kate Lister is a researcher at Leeds Trinity University in historical attitudes to sexuality and sex work. She has published on the history of media narratives around sex work, the history of menstruation, and sexual violence in historical drama. She's the curator of the online research project whoresofyore.com, which archives the work of sex workers, activists, academics, and artists, and brings the message of sexual positivity to an even wider audience. The project has over 95,000 followers on Twitter. Kate is on the board of the International Sex Work Research Hub, is a columnist for The Independent, and has worked as a historical consultant for Channel 5's upcoming My Sexual Fantasy. Welcome to the show.
Hello, it's lovely to be here.
So, where do we start? Let's talk about this term whore.
Okay, let's talk about that word. Yes. I think that the kind of what interests me about that word and about words like slut and slag and those kind of terms is that why when we're trying to insult a woman are those our go-to words, and maybe bitch as well, but overwhelmingly the insults that we go to are sexually charged words, you know, and they attack a woman's sexual morality, I suppose, more than anything else. Like you would call a woman that you don't know, but you'd call her a slut or a slag, but you have no idea about her sexual, she could be a nun for all you know, you've absolutely no idea. So I'm really interested in how we've got to the point where words like whore and slut and slag, they've become our go-to insults, and why that is about us.
I mean, I find that fascinating because it's so much about, to me, if you control the sexuality, you control the person.
Yes. Yeah.
So much about using those insults is about controlling that. It says you can't own your sexuality. If you do, that you are immoral and need to be denigrated.
It's about shaming, isn't it? It's about, it's a very neatly encapsulated sort of verbal missile to throw at somebody that says that you are a bad person. You're a bad person because you have sex, and that makes you a bad person. And I think the thing that I'm really interested about the word whore is because I called my project Whores of Yore, and I used the word because I wanted to tweet and research about the history of illicit sex. And I thought that word summed it up very nicely because that tends to be the word that we use. It's not necessarily tied to a profession like the word prostitute is. It's more of a moral state. But the reaction that I've got from the sex work community online has been really eye-opening around that and very humbling because I was trying to sort of convey the idea that there's a history of shaming sex and illicit sex and sexual attitudes, really. And they never have in the West been particularly positive. But the sex work community have been very vocal about the fact that the word whore has a very different meaning for them. And it's used to insult them on a daily basis. And it's a very degrading word in a lot of ways, but then it's also another word that is in a state of reclamation amongst
right.
Them, you know, and it's like so there are like that, like the word, I don't know if I'm allowed to use any of them, but the N word.
Yes, you can use all of them.
Oh, can I? Okay, right. Yeah. So like, but the word nigger, for example. See, I shouldn't even, if I use that, I'd probably lose my job if I used it in the wrong context.
Right.
But in certain social groups with certain people, or like in rap lyrics, for example, then it takes on a new meaning and becomes very defiant, but it's not for a white person to use.
Exactly.
But unspoken rules about it. And the word whore is very much in that state. Is it okay for somebody who's not a sex worker to use that term? You know, and that's a whole other debate. I'm trying to use it to convey. And I think that it is because I think most women at some point or another have been slut shamed, have been called names. I know I've certainly been called a whore and a slag and a slut. And that's just by my mother. That's not true. My mum's lovely. But so I kind of use it to represent that. But if that's an interesting debate, is it okay for me to use it, for anyone else to use it?
But and I mean, it's hard because it is very much, you know, it as you say, it does have two meanings. One is the meaning that is really just confined to sex work. But most women who are sexually active have been called that at some point.
Or not even sexually active. Joan of Arc.
That's true.
She was a virgin and they called her a whore. Or Elizabeth the First, Virgin Queen, she was also called a whore. So I don't even think that you have to be sexually active to be able to be insulted as being sexually active.
You know what I mean? Boy, what does that say?
I don't know what that says.
That's like the worst thing in the world is to be sexually active. You can be a murderer, that's not so bad. But being sexually active as a woman, that's really awful.
Thing. And then like, and if you want to insult a man, you call him a son of a bitch or a son of a whore.
Son of a whore, yeah.
Which is again insulting the woman, the female sexuality. I can't really think of any words that attack men's sexuality in the same way. I mean, maybe you can call a guy a dick, I suppose, but it's not, doesn't really have the same impact or gravitas. Or like you could call him like a man whore, but even that's using the word itself.
It's now that's actually like a joke usually. When you call somebody a man whore, that's something they're proud of.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not, you know, and if you call them a dick, it doesn't have the kind of power. It's like, oh, well, they're a dick, but, you know, it just doesn't have that kind of power to it. I mean, I was fascinated as an American coming to the UK 27 years ago, the word cunt is not a word that's used in America.
No, it is not. And you can get in a lot of trouble with that one.
It's like, you know, women go the C word, the fact that I say it out loud, there will be people who will have an issue with me for saying it out loud. But it's not something that Americans use. I use it having integrated it from being in the United Kingdom. And in the UK, that is like, that's like a big insult, yeah? What you call somebody.
Up in Scotland, in Glasgow, it can be a term of endearment. It can, like, they regularly just call each other the wee cunt with all of this.
You
wee cunt.
Now that one I hadn't heard, I love that.
If you're up in Scotland, everything is a cunt. You say things like, oh, I'm going to go and see that cunt. Oh, you know that cunt told me about. Ah, see you later, you wee cunt. It's just, yeah, just become the word for.
And it's like, what do they think they're saying? And for an American, the first time that I heard somebody say it and nobody dropped dead on the floor, you know, it was sort of like, I remember turning to my ex and saying, what the fuck was that? You know, I mean, like, he just used the C word and he was like, and so what?
Yeah.
So what? You know, that's just kind of like, and so to me, that was fascinating. It's like, how did our genitals become this like very casual insult, term of endearment?
Yeah, like in the UK, it is still regarded as the worst swear word. There were
yes.
A British film classification last year polled swear words from least offensive to most offensive, and cunt was up there, and it was twinned with nigger. Now, I ask you, how is that possible? How, I mean, like the N word. That comes to us from the worst atrocities that human beings have been capable of.
Right. And comes to us from our mothers, you know, and ourselves. And I mean, it's our anatomy. What is the...
Absolutely. I mean, like that, the N-word was used to justify some of the most rank and awful treatments of black people. Well, ever. It's hideous. But whereas cunt is actually the oldest word that we have for female genitals. It predates vulva and vagina by many, many hundreds of years. And if you go back to the medieval period, it turns up in medical texts. It's just the word.
It's like, yeah, it's just like saying vagina. It's just, that's the term for...
You would go to a medieval doctor and say, I think I need my cunt swabbing, please. Whatever it was you...
Love it.
You'd have a cunt doctor. You would have gynecology. You'd have cuntecology. But somehow down the etymological route, it started to become more and more and more offensive. And it's, the word vagina, I don't know if you ever touched on this before, but that means like a sheath, something that you put a sword into, a scabbard. So its entire etymological function is to hold a sword. That's what that word means. So it's not a very empowering word.
No, it's very disempowering.
Purpose to hold a penis.
How interesting.
Yes.
How interesting.
Cunt doesn't actually mean anything. We don't even know what it means. That's how old it is. We can't even trace its root, although some people have theorized that it has links, like a root word of gyne, which we get gynecology, things that are, or perhaps gen from genetics, and both of those mean life.
Right.
So cunt might actually mean life, procreation. Whereas vagina means a sheath.
How interesting.
Yes.
So
not that everyone...
How far back does...
Go on.
How far back does horror go?
It's lost in the midst of time. It's really, really, really old, that one. The Vikings used it. It was kind of like a hurra that they had, and it means adulterous then. But they've traced it to perhaps that it has a root of ka. Like it's a Proto-Indo-European, as in like before kind of we split off and got loads of different languages. And ka is the root word to also charis and karma, Kama Sutra. It means love.
Right.
So they've theorized that originally whore meant she that desires or she that loves.
Right.
And then somewhere down the road, it started to take on more negative connotations. But it doesn't start to mean a sex worker or isn't used in those terms until round about sort of the early modern period. Is like Shakespeare uses it over 100 times in his plays, but it doesn't mean someone that sells sex. It just means a woman that has sex. So it's not linked to profession. It's just a kind of a general insult. But yeah.
Wow.
But still, that's still a very powerful word, right? Is it still, you have to think twice before you drop the W bomb. I think Randy Rhodes was fired for calling Hillary Clinton a big whore in the campaign trail last year. So it's still a very powerful word.
Yeah, well, I mean, I mean, it carries a lot of weight. It's demeaning. It's shaming.
Yep. And I suppose, well, because like when we're growing up, it's like we have all these roles enforced to us, and especially about being women. I mean, men have their own roles enforced to them as well, without a shadow of a doubt. But women, it's all about, you know, don't do that, don't, and we kind of teach children shame very early on, you know, like if you've been around small children, is that they regularly just take their clothes off and run around because they're hot,
without a
hint of shame or anything else. Yeah, my darling nephew, who I hope will never hear this, is two, and he's just discovered his willy. He just will sit there and he's watching In the Night Garden or Sarah and Duck, and he's just got his hands down his pants. And it's stinking, which I can't wait to tell him this when he's 18. But
you
have to teach kids that's wrong and we don't do that.
Well, and it's
you know,
it's so delicate because it is natural.
You know,
it's natural.
Yeah,
two is about the right age when they do this.
Yeah,
boys and girls. And I've dealt with so many parents over the years and talking with them about, well, how do we handle this? Like, whatever you do, it's got to be non-shaming. So the message needs to be not in public.
Yeah.
But not don't do this or there's something wrong with this. It has to be, it's a private, pleasurable activity. It's your thing that you can do. But not yeah. while you're cuddling up to mommy, or not while you're, you know, you know, not while your aunt's in the room, or, you know, and it's so...
Like, how'd you do it without messing them up? Like, it's so delicate, isn't it? But, like, we have to, from just a very early age, is that we program ourselves and our kids to feel shame around sex, I think. Or at least we teach them that's it's bad in some capacity. You know, and the word whore is just a big extension of that, because it can really, it's quite a wounding word as well. Even if you're trying to inhabit it and own it, it's still a real shaming word at the same time, you know?
You know, when I heard you speak recently at Scarlet Ladies, and one of the things that you spoke about was how quick we are as women to go to that place.
Oh, yeah.
Which I found... you know, yeah. really liberating to kind of have that brought up, because I think women listening, that'll be a part of shame in listening to the conversation, is that how often it's not just men who hurl this as an insult. It's the first place that most women go.
Yeah. Yeah. You've got to ask yourself is, have you ever slut shamed another woman? Have you ever called another woman a slut or a whore or a slag? Or for any reason whatsoever, is like, are you part of that debate? And I think the honest truth is that all of us are. I think that whenever we try and reduce gender issues down to sort of like men versus women, is that we end up, it's overly reductive, simplistic, and doesn't help anybody, because we don't have a situation where women are desperately railing against this, but men are oppressing us all the time. Is we internalize this and we do this to ourselves.
Yeah,
you know. That's the way that this works, is we've taken on these messages and we are part of the same cultural narrative that shames sex.
And that continues.
Yeah, and it continues, right? As I found myself, you know, on several occasions, a very, very close friend of mine recently found out that her long-term partner had been cheating. And I did know the person that he was cheating with from Adam, but it didn't stop me being sat there in the kitchen with my friend and a glass of gin, calling her every name under the sun, you know. And I have a PhD in this stuff, and I should know that it was still my go-to insult.
Well, that kind of stuff always fascinates me, because we go and we are programmed and trained, most of women, to go to the other woman.
Yes.
But the other woman, unless it was the best friend, you know, which is different, yeah. The other woman has nothing to do with any of this, because the other woman didn't have a contract with her partner.
Absolutely.
It was their contract that's broken. It's her consent that's violated. And yet, where will we go first? We will, instead of binding together, we tend to attack each other.
I think it's because we grow up viewing each other as the competition.
Yep.
I think that unfortunately there's a big part of that. There's a lot of in-house fighting and cattiness and I think we feel very jealous and threatened by sexual women, by beautiful women, by women that think they have that they offer more than we do, and a way to do that, to attack it when you feel threatened, is to try and attack the very thing that's scaring you, which is their sexuality. So you shame it.
Yeah,
you know, I think that we're all guilty of that. You know, like if you see, like, how many times have you, I don't know, seen a friend or maybe even someone in a magazine, and they just look absolutely balls to the wall, amazing. And instead of saying, oh my God, you look so beautiful, or you might say it to the face, but then you'll go, fucking bitch, 2 minutes later, you know? And it's a jealous thing, isn't it? You'll be like, oh, bitch, she looks so nice. And yeah.
Yeah, instead of actually feeling that positivity on, I'm polyamorous, as people who've listened to this before know. And there's this whole idea of compersion, which is joy from someone else's joy.
Yeah.
It's a different emotion. Not everybody manages it. It's an amazing feeling to have when you can actually take genuine, extreme joy in the pleasure of your partner with someone else, right? Yeah. And it's not just a sexual thing. It's about the ability to collaborate. and empathize, which is not something we're taught. We are definitely taught that we need to compete, and we're taught that there's a scarce amount of every single resource. Yeah. Right. There's a scarce amount of money. There's a scarce amount of partners. And so we're taught from a very young age, you must compete to be the best so that you get the prizes. Otherwise, there isn't a middle ground. We're not told, well, you may not get, you know, the highest prize, but you'll get the second prize. It's kind of like, if you don't get the prizes, then you end up alone with no money on the street. You know, it's this horrible message.
I think as well, it's like we have a culture that enables or like justifies women being very jealous and catty towards each other, and men for be competing with each other. It's far more permissive in our culture for a man to punch another man in the face for hitting on his woman than entertaining the idea of you know, exploring what's going on there, or how does it talk, or, you know, maybe God forbid, you know, let your partner go and explore something with them. We live in a world where we expect that kind of real levels of sexual jealousy and being very defensive. And I think that feeds into an awful lot of what we do. We're not each other's best friends, really, are we? And I think that
No, and we dehumanize in order to do that.
Yes, we do.
And so that's how we manage it. You know, it's like, okay, so if I shame you and I dehumanize you, then it's easier for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's what the word whore does. It just very neatly, because the whore is a very other figure. Like, it's other to us. It becomes, if you ask people like to do like word association, is what do you think of when I say the word whore? And it kind of, and like the sexualized women, and especially sex workers, they're very much like liminal people. They're on the margins. They're kind of like of our polite society. And people think that they know what that is, or they think they know what a whore is or anything else, but they don't. It's just this kind of invented persona that it's comfortable for us to imagine that it is.
Yeah, no, my experience is that people have very little idea what sex workers do actually do in life, and how many different kinds of sex worker there are, and their social function they serve, which, you know, people don't pay attention to. I know quite a few sex workers, and in talking with them about some of their regular clients, many of the people I know see people who are disabled, who don't have sexual partners in the world. They're not considered desirable enough. Yeah. They're not considered attractive enough. And so society takes this attitude that, well, they don't, if you don't look a certain way, then you have no sexual needs. It's amazing to me. They kind of wipe out sexual needs.
It's a big thing amongst disability rights, is the right to be seen as sexual beings, because although we're very good at, like, we have unfortunately quite a patronizing attitude towards disabled people, and we're not comfortable like viewing them as having sexual needs. And it's something that we need to stop doing. But I know that that's a big issue and amongst disabled rights. And just on that subject, there's an amazing Australian activist called Rachel Watton, who made a documentary called Scarlet Road, and it's about her work as a sex worker and a sex worker activist, and her work with disabled clients. It's a really heartbreaking, deeply moving film, and I challenge anyone to watch it and say that's not okay. The only issue that I have, and it's not even really an issue, with the kind of the idea of working with disabled clients, is that that's often touted out as the acceptable face of sex work. And I think that we need to be careful that we don't try and create this, like, what's often called a hierarchy, which is that we get to the point where we go, well, that kind of sex work is okay. If for disabled people, it's okay. That's okay. We also need to be able to say people have sex with sex workers because it's fun.
Well, exactly. Well, you know, and it's a really important point. And women have sex with sex workers. More and more women have sex with sex workers. And then we don't talk about that either, because somehow there's something wrong with that. Women have sex with sex workers because it's fun. Women have sex with sex workers because it's easier than a relationship in certain circumstances, because they can get their needs met and get exactly what they want. So they have sex with sex workers for the same reason that men have sex with sex workers. But we just don't talk about that. Women go to explore their sexuality. They go to explore kinks so that they don't have to, so they have more control.
Do you know, we we're so wedded to this idea of a sex worker being someone that sells, for being a street sex worker and being a street sex worker who's addicted to drugs and possibly under duress in some way, that we ignore the huge, vast swathe of actual real experience. And let's not pretend for a second that street sex work doesn't exist and that there aren't people who are addicted, and that certainly needs to be part of the conversation. But we ignore a huge, huge body of other experiences and other voices. And women go to sex workers for what you don't see is, you don't see women curb crawling. Like, you don't see a woman.
No.
There's not a red light district for women where men stand on corners. That, I don't think that happens anywhere.
No, women do patronize red light districts, but then when they patronize them, they're patronizing them to see women.
Yes, they are. Yeah, it's a different dynamic. Maybe we should set it up, light district for just with men sex workers. Anyway, well,
they did something in Amsterdam, actually, and I cannot remember. I'll have to look it up now. But there was a night that they gave male sex workers the windows to highlight the fact that, in fact, there are male sex workers, and they gave them all the windows. So all you could find were the men.
In the UK, recent research was presented to the Select Home Office Committee revealed that almost 50% of sex workers in the UK are men. So that's who would, I mean, they have, a lot of them have male clients as well, obviously, but you're talking about almost half of UK sex workers are men. So to try and pretend that isn't a very real thing is just ridiculous, quite frankly. But women go to see sex work, the most people I've spoken to, is it's because they're exploring kinks and fantasies, and like, let's, if you have a fantasy, like a ravishment fantasy or like a hardcore BDSM fantasy, it can be very difficult to ask for that from a partner, or for certainly someone that you've just met on Tinder, for God's sake. Is you have to be able to create that, so it can go really wrong, you know, so that you can be a sex worker to try and live that out and to be able to walk away from it as well.
Yeah. I mean, and in fact, I have recommended that to people. Mm. I've recommended specifically, you know, this is a list of sex workers that are kink and BDSM folks that are above board, and that will look after you. And if that's what you want to do, or you're afraid of the process of trying to weed out people that you know nothing about, and you don't want to just jump into a world without knowing, and you're scared, and you've got control. It's not the same experience. And I think people need to understand that if you hire somebody to dominate you, it's not the same experience.
Yeah.
Because you have all of the power, because you've got a contract.
Yeah.
But it is a way of creating an experience that's exactly tailored to you, mm-hmm. that you're allowed to go whatever pace you want to go, because you're not worrying about the other person's pleasure.
You don't have to worry about the other person. You don't have to invest in them. You don't have to worry if they're going to come home and meet your parents. You don't have to phone them the next day. You don't have, it's something that's often called performing. You don't have to perform for them.
Yes.
I've never seen a sex worker, but a couple of years ago, I paid a tantric massager to do what was called a yoni massage.
Uh-huh, I know about those.
I was doing lots of research into tantra and those kind of things, blah, 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 and I wondered what it was like. And I'll be completely honest, it was probably one of the most profound experiences that I've ever had, which sounds, and I, you know, I don't know if you can not believe in tantra, but I don't believe in tantra. Like it's Father Christmas or something, but it was still. Yeah. And I think what did it was the fact that I couldn't perform. Like I was so, we get into sexual scripts as well, you know.
You have to just give yourself over to the experience in that situation.
You can't do that. And like your sexual script becomes your armor, and it becomes your like, although I'm having sex with this person, I'm not actually going to let anybody in. I'm not going to be vulnerable. I'm going to be the tough girl, and I'm gonna be this, and I'm gonna be a sex goddess, blah, blah, blah. And I had an hour and a half with this guy, and it certainly wasn't all internal by any stretch of imagination, but I was completely naked, and it was he was just like going around my body and just like putting his hand on certain pressure points, and I couldn't go back to my sexual script, and I couldn't perform, and I just had to be me, and it's probably the and I bawled like a baby. It was the weirdest thing. I cried. It was like, honestly, I've never experienced anything like it, and I don't believe in tantra, but there you go. That was the experience I had, and I certainly didn't feel demeaned by it, and I didn't feel that I demeaned him by it, and it felt like it was quite a powerful thing just by creating a space where I didn't have to do anything apart from receive something. I didn't have to keep giving.
And for women, that's a big deal. That's a huge, I mean, I get that because that's such a huge deal. Women are not, as a rule, we are not used to receiving. We're not taught to receive. We're not, I mean, Peggy Orenstein's recent research says the new generation aren't being taught to receive any better than we were generations back, is that we're still taught that the idea is that we give pleasure and we're not taught our own pleasure. And so there's a reprogramming that has to happen.
Yeah, or like we fake an orgasm. We fake an orgasm because like we want the guy to feel he's doing well. You know, like it becomes all about him. It becomes about pleasing him. It becomes about like, have I made him have an orgasm? Have we done this? And we're not ever taught to just lie back and experience something and feel something. And I think just the experience of doing that, of having nowhere to run and nowhere to go and no way of going, it's all right, I'm gonna do this thing now and blow your mind. And I couldn't do any of that. And it was one of the most powerful things I've ever done. It really was.
Yeah, no, I believe that. I mean, and and isn't that an amazing message? You know, the idea of actually having to be present and just receive.
Just receive.
That's petrifying. That's absolutely, for anybody that doesn't think it is, I challenge them to go and do something like that. Because it's absolutely petrifying to give up that control.
I had no idea what that was. Like, I knew what it was going to be like. I knew that it was going to be, you know, and like the idea that you try and get back in touch with your body and like you feel your body. And I kind of went to it being like, I know my body. I totally know my body. I write about sex for a living. I know my body. Turns out I didn't know diddly squat.
I love it.
It was just that space of just, right, you can't be the big tough girl. You can't be the mind-blowing nymphomaniac who's going to rock his world. You just have to just feel this person touching your body and actually feel it and experience it and know that you don't have to reciprocate it. It's not like I don't have to do it back. And it was a really profound thing. And I would recommend all women to go and have this done, by the way. All women listening to this, go and...
I know. I would actually agree with that because I think it's one of the few spaces in which you will experience that... Receiving complete receptive state and without being in control.
And without being judged. And of
wanting. And it's an amazing place.
It really is.
But it is a scary place and it does take braveness. So go and do it with braveness.
Yeah. Yeah. I cried. It was the weirdest thing. I cried and he cried. And we both cried together. And like, I've never done anything like that before. Very, very strange that your body can move you like that still, you know?
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Yeah.
And and that's within an environment that's non-shaming.
Very non-shaming. Yeah, very, it was with a guy, but he didn't feel creepy. He didn't feel lecherous. He didn't feel like he was after something. He was never going to overstep any marks. I felt completely... And maybe like that was something weird as well that I've not experienced, is I felt completely safe with him. As I didn't have to do anything back. He didn't expect anything, you know?
And that's also something that we don't usually get.
No, and although it wasn't, it sounds strange to say that it wasn't sexual because obviously there was nudity and some internal touching involved, but it wasn't sexual. It was like a touch thing, you know? It was more powerful than that, as it wasn't like a big erotic thing.
But I have to say that, and to a degree, that's really sad to me that we now divorce sexual from that level of power, because that's what sexual is supposed to be.
Yeah.
Right? But we've got so much, there's so much shame and there's so much splitting that goes on around sex and orgasm now, that an experience like that to be powerful, it feels so different from anything sexual we've known that it just doesn't feel sexual.
It was hard to describe because it wasn't sexual. There was touch involved, but it was much more about like, because the point of it is that they believe that you have trauma stored in your body.
Yes. Yes.
You have a muscle knot. Yeah. So they go around your whole body and they basically push really hard on certain parts. And the idea is that you really feel it and you kind of, instead of running away from the pain, like you kind of give over to it.
So right. So you're releasing the muscle memory. Yeah.
Yeah. Releasing. That's the one, releasing the muscle memory. And then they do it in the genitals as well, in just towards the end of it. And it was just like, I don't know, something was released. It was just like all the bad sex and all the pretending about sex and everything just suddenly came flooding back to me. And I just cried and cried. It was, I mean, you can't say that it wasn't sexual, but I suppose it's because it's like nothing sexual I've ever experienced
before. It's cathartic. It was cathartic.
That's the one. It was.
But what I think is so interesting about that is that, and that a lot of people, myself included, will describe certain BDSM stuff that way. Like, yeah. I'm an edge player, so I tend to get into intense pain. And after my father died 4 years ago, it was 6 weeks after he, was it 6 weeks after he passed? 7 weeks after he passed. My husband and I go to an annual sex positive event every year. And so we went, and I'd already had a play date arranged with two women that I'm friends with, close with. And I had to say to them, look, I don't know how this is going to go. Cause normally I can manage an awful lot, but you know, I have a feeling this is going to be like all my grief is going to end up in this. And it was the most cathartic experience I'd ever had. And it was really all of the grief I'd been feeling and everything I'd been holding came pouring out in this scene.
Yeah.
In front of about 150 people, which was a bit. But I was completely unaware of anybody but the two people that I was engaged with.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was incredibly powerful. And it was just completely cathartic. So somebody would say, well, was it sexual? Well, it was cathartic. It was, that was where we were. And so, yeah, it was sexual, but it was also cathartic. But sex can also be used as a means of processing.
Yeah.
And that's something we also don't talk about, you know, that there's lots of things that we use sex for. And that actually, if you're willing to be present with somebody, you can do all sorts of things with sex, but you have to be present first.
I mean, I think that you hit the nail on the head there. It was something cathartic. I mean, it wasn't like a really intense thing, you know, and if I'm feeling facetious, we could just say that it was a kind of a fancy fingering. But it was so much more than that. Still don't even know what it was, but something happened. It moved something. But I think from him, I never felt that it was in any way sexual for him.
It was, yes.
I think that did something. That made me feel very safe. So.
Well, that's very freeing, actually.
Yeah. Definitely. That's... But it was just an amazing, it's probably one of the most profound experiences that I've ever had. And I kind of went to it thinking like, whatevs, this is a giggle. And it just really wasn't at all. I was lying there in floods of tears going, well, this is hysterical, Kate. Well done. But yeah, that took me by surprise to say the least.
Well, understandably. I'm not sure anybody can predict that either. Well, maybe they think they can predict that. I don't know. They might.
Well, this is like, they do this kind of tantric massage like all the time. So I suppose that they must have people with things coming up and.
I'm sure they have people with stuff coming up all over the place.
Yeah.
So if people want to find you, where should they go to find you?
Oh, they can find me on Twitter, which is @whoresofyore. Yore, as in Y-O-R-E. Some people think I'm saying York, and they spend forever searching for Whores of York. Not that one. Or there's a website, which is thewhoresofyore.com. And you can get in contact with me there, and my email address is on there. And you can talk to me. That's fine.
And on the podcast notes, everything, the links will be there. So people can find you and follow you. So can I thank you so much for joining me? This has been great fun.
This has been a lot of fun. And if anybody listening has any kind of story that they want to share or like something that they have experienced, is I have a whole part of the website which is dedicated to people just telling their sexual stories. And you can be completely anonymous if you like, but if you have a voice, I want people to be able to hear it.
Okay, so now I will encourage people to contribute that, and we'll remind people in the podcast notes that they can do that. So thanks for joining me for the A to Z of Sex. Please write to me with your suggestions for the show, questions that you might want answered at Dr. Lori Beth at atozofsex.com. That's DRLORIBETH at ATOZ if you're American, OFSEX.com. Please follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, and check out my YouTube channel. For a free 30-minute strategy session with me, go to https://ATOZOFSEX.com/, and click the button that says schedule now. I'll see you next week when the letter will be X, and X again is for X-rated. Thank you very much for listening. Thanks for tuning in. You were just listening to the A to Z of Sex. If you enjoyed the show, please leave a review here on iTunes and make sure you head over to www.atozofsex.com. That's ATOZOFSEX. To subscribe to my free newsletter to help you keep your sex life sizzling. Stay tuned for upcoming weekly episodes as we work our way through the sexual alphabet to discover the wide world of sex, sexuality, desire, and intimacy. Knowledge gives you the power to create relationships that bring you satisfaction and joy. Hope to see you next week.